It's easy to support Murderific. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, or wherever you listen. Follow me on social media on Instagram at Murderific Podcast or Twitter at Murderific BPC. Like what you hear? Rate us 5 stars on iTunes and tell a friend.
Hello and welcome to the Murderific True Crime Podcast, featuring your host, Bernadette.
Content warning. The Murderific True Crime Podcast contains offensive language and will have information about kidnappings, torture, murder and sexual assault. It is inappropriate for children or the faint of heart.
Welcome, friends, to the Season 3 finale of Murderific True Crime Podcast, Episode 30. We've made it 30 episodes.
It's crazy.
I know. We will be taking a short hiatus until February 2020 so I can write new material and new Patreon episodes and change a few things up for Season 4. If you are a patron or want to join Murderific's Patreon, now would be a great time because you'll still get monthly content throughout the break, so you won't go through any sort of withdrawal. And if you're like, hey, I haven't heard Murderific for a while, that would be a good time to join Patreon. And I know sometimes people think Patreon is confusing or expensive. It's neither of those things. It's literally $5 a month, not like $5 a week even. It's $5 a month, like less than a cup of coffee. You also will be helping to support my podcast.
Where are you buying coffee?
Starbucks, bro.
Oh, well, that's why it's, you know, $5.
No, it's $5 everywhere. So
I get my coffee for 99 cents, well, at the Rusty Lantern.
Ooh, I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah.
I'm going to read my patrons' names at the end of this episode, so no, I didn't forget you guys. Let's get into episode 30 today. My guest today is Casey.
Howdy, folks.
Thanks for joining me on the season 3 finale. Sources for this episode will be listed on the website. So what's been going on in your life, Casey?
You know, getting depressed that ice cream season is over.
Oh, yeah, it's really, you know, over.
It's Maine. It's, you know, freezing every day now. So the ice cream connoisseur in me is getting depressed.
Seasonal depression is happening. So today was Burn Day, which sounds weird, but it's basically a day that we made up where I do whatever I want all day. Casey is not allowed to complain. He had to cook for me all day. We had to go where I wanted to go all day. He had to do chores. It's kind of like from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where they had D-Day, but instead it was Burn Day. So today is a pretty good day for me.
No complaining. That was tough.
Yeah, you did a good job, though.
Thank you.
A Vider woman, Kamisha Block, was killed in Iraq while serving in the military.
Her family calls the events following her death a military cover-up, and they want justice.
August 2007, two soldiers arrived at the door of soldier Kamisha Block's family to let them know that Kamisha had been killed in Iraq by friendly fire, a single gunshot to her chest. Very devastating news for a veteran's family. But on top of this, only when they got to the funeral home did Kamisha's family notice she had a gunshot wound in her head covered by makeup, contradicting what they had been told by the military. A 12-year battle ensued, with Kamisha's family doing everything possible to get to the truth of what happened to Kamisha Block. This is a story of a military cover-up. Who really murdered Kamisha, and why would the military cover their tracks and lie to the family?
I had the good fortune to speak to Kamisha's sister, Shanta, for this episode. Also, Mac Matthews, James Radigan, Joel Hastings. Their words and video clips will be throughout the episode. Thank you to all of you for your time. We will begin the podcast by talking about Kamisha as a child, what she was like. Kamisha's sister, Shanta, explains.
Kamisha had a great childhood. She grew up in a small town in Texas. My sister was always smiling. She was always in a positive mood. If she seen other people down, she would definitely try to pick their spirit back up. I'm younger than her by 1 year. Her birthday is August the 4th. Mine's August the 17th.
Kamisha graduated in 2005. After graduation, Kamisha was working waiting tables in Texas at a Waffle House. Texas was a pro-Bush state at that time, and Kamisha was pretty gung-ho about Operation Iraqi Freedom. Kamisha wasn't making much money waitressing and decided that joining the military would be a good way to begin her career in law enforcement and see the world. Her mother, Jane, was very upset by her choice, but Kamisha said, quote, "Mom, I've got my mind made up. Somebody has to do it. Freedom doesn't come free," unquote. She was part of the military police in Seoul, and she was only 19 years old. This was her first time overseas.
Yeah, that was a huge change for her. A small town like Vidor, Texas, to Seoul, Korea, which was really a big city, bright lights kind of a situation.
She returned to Texas in December of 2006 and was assigned to the 401st Military Police Battalion, 89th Military Brigade at Fort Hood, Texas.
It was there she met Paul Brandon Norris. Paul Norris was, by some accounts, an impressive squad leader and was looked up to in his platoon. He was very outgoing. He was also sometimes described as hot-tempered, impulsive, and dangerous. He was usually referred to as Brandon Norris, so that's how we'll address him.
I asked Shanta when she first heard of her sister and Norris's relationship.
I first heard of her and Brandon when she had got home from Korea and was stationed at Fort Hood. I was pregnant at the time, and she had came down to my baby shower, and he had brought her. But I thought it was a little weird that he never got out of the truck.
Kamisha and Brandon were both at Fort Hood. Brandon Norris was 30 years old. They met at a dance club. They talked for about 30 minutes and left together. Norris was a higher rank than Kamisha, and though he was separated from his wife, he was still married. Their relationship was against military rules because of that. They both could have been discharged or lose benefits. But despite this, the couple started a secret close relationship. They were in love. People began to notice they were together quite a bit, and not in a professional type of way. Before long, the relationship grew turbulent and explosive. One day in Texas, Brandon grabbed her by the throat and shoved her against a wall. No charges were filed, and he grew controlling and jealous.
Kamisha wanted out of the relationship, and she spoke of this to her sister, Shanta.
I did know that there was something going on. I didn't know to the extent. My sister had called me a week prior to her being murdered and told me that nobody would help her, and she was very upset. You could hear it in her voice. She was shaking on the phone, and I told her everything would be okay because she was coming home next month. She just said, "He won't leave me alone. He won't leave me alone, and nobody will help me."
Kamisha was stationed in Iraq as a driver, a very dangerous job. And she arrived there before Brandon as he had some leadership training to do.
Yeah, that is the most dangerous job in the military during wartime. You hear it all the time, the explosive devices, the IEDs. Super dangerous.
Yeah, very scary. She's putting her life on the line. Before long, Brandon began accusing her of seeing other men because they were separated. Once he was done his leadership training and he was in Iraq, he went right back to his controlling, possessive ways with Kamisha. One day while in Iraq, witnesses saw an altercation. A male soldier helped Kamisha pick up a heavy box. He innocently brushed up against her or by her breast, and Brandon ran up to them and grabbed the man by his shirt collar and screamed at both of them. Kamisha told friends that Norris was aggressive in and out of bed. She told some of her military friends that Brandon was trying to control her. Kamisha was trying to get out of the relationship at this point, but when she was around any other man, he would yell at her and grab her physically. People did try to intervene on her behalf, but he would bring up his rank and say that he was the boss, which he was. So it really didn't matter what anyone would say to him because he outranked them.
And you know how the military is. You have to do whatever your boss says, right?
Norris was on his third deployment and, as we mentioned, was going through a divorce. He was also close to the fifth anniversary of his two sisters dying in a car accident in 2002. Brandon wasn't sleeping, was taking steroids, was losing control of Kamisha, and was very stressed and was drinking a lot. Now would be a good time to take a break to listen to a couple of promos from other amazing podcasts.
Hello, everyone. Let me tell you about the Apple for the Teacher podcast. I'm Anna Thomas, a teacher and your host. So you're probably thinking it's about reading, writing, and arithmetic, right? Well, think again. It's a fresh take on true crime, where you wouldn't expect to find true crime. In schools. Yes, schools. You will hear tragic stories about murder, abduction, school bus hijack, student disappearance, suicide, kidnap and ransom, a school camp tragedy, the list goes on. So if you're looking for something a little different in the true crime genre, then Apple for the Teacher is for you. So join me as I present The Bad Apples. But until then, remember to be a good apple.
This is Weird on the Rocks, a podcast that explores the weird, unusual, strange, and unexplained, all while getting our drink on. Join me every other Monday as I share a different cocktail and discuss true crime, paranormal stories, unexplained phenomena, conspiracy theories, and much more. Find Weird on the Rocks on social media, the website weirdontherocks.weebly.com, and listen on all of your favorite podcast apps. And don't forget to cheers and stay weird.
Fast forward to August 17th, 2007. Two military men showed up at the Block home in the United States. Kamisha's sister, who was 18, pulled up at the same time as she saw the car going to her home. Kamisha's dad, Jerry, and mom, Jane, and Shanta were told that Kamisha had been killed in a non-combat related incident with friendly fire. They were also told that she had a single gunshot wound to her chest. Shanta tells us a little bit about that horrible day.
I was the only person that spoke to my sister that day. I was talking to her on Yahoo Messenger, and I had bought a webcam, and that was the first day that she had ever seen my son. I put him in my lap, and she started crying, and she told me that he was really cute and she couldn't wait to get home to see him next month. And she told me happy birthday, and I told her, well, it's not till tomorrow, but we are going to celebrate my birthday tonight with my friends, so I'm going to bring Hayden to my mother's house. And about that time, I had seen Brandon stick his face in the camera and then cut it off. Not thinking of anything, I went to my mother's house. Went in there maybe an hour, and I left, and I started going down the road, and I seen two army guys in a vehicle, and I knew nobody else down the road was in the military. I knew what it was about. And I went all the way back to the dead end where my parents lived, and I got out of the truck. I didn't even kill it. And I walked up, and I seen the chaplain with the Bible behind his back, and I just started crying. And I said, don't tell me, just don't tell me, okay? Please don't tell me. And about that time, my mom and dad walked out on the porch, and my mom just went to screaming. And they said that she was shot once to the chest by friendly fire.
When Kamisha's body came home from Baghdad, it went to the Memorial Funeral Home in Vidor, Texas. Her mom, Jane, went to have a look at her beloved daughter. It was going to be an open casket funeral. Her mother noticed a large spot on the lower right side of her daughter's head. It looked like a bullet wound. She was totally shocked and confused as the military had said something different. August 23, 2007, a funeral was held in the small Texas town with a funeral procession of 75 members of the Texas Patriot Guard Riders, a veteran motorcycle group. Hundreds of people in town lined the streets holding American flags. After the funeral, the family of Kamisha began trying to find out what really happened to her in Iraq. Different military police would tell them different things. They were getting the runaround, and it was very devastating for the family, who had already been through so much pain losing Kamisha. Shanta, Kamisha's sister, said, quote, "It was just lie after lie after lie," unquote. The family has done so much to get to the real story. Again, in Shanta's words,
"At this point, the efforts my family has made to get the truth has been above and beyond what any family should have to go through. We have had to pay our own private investigators. I have been to Congressman Babin's office. I've been to the FBI."
The family waited 6 months for a report on Kamisha's August 16th death. They were told the first report was lost.
Wow.
I can't even fathom that.
I can't either.
It was lost. It was a 1,200-page report that said that Kamisha Block was shot to death by her 30-year-old boyfriend, Staff Sergeant Paul Brandon Norris, who then killed himself after the murder. The report that the family received was heavily redacted and missing much information. There was enough information, though, that the family knew that a superior officer with whom Kamisha Block had an abusive relationship with had killed her, and also that the military came to their home and lied to them about it. Their congressman, Kevin Brady, demanded a death report and tried to pressure the Defense Department to investigate the investigation.
Which sounds ridiculous. They're investigating the first investigation. Good luck with getting the truth out of that.
Right.
After the report came in, Jane Block, Kamisha's mom, called the media to let people know what had happened to her daughter and how the military was trying to cover it up. So that's a smart choice right there, getting the media involved. Any attention to this case is a good thing. Now would be a good point in the podcast to take a break and talk about holistic hemp healing. Is your true crime podcast obsession giving you anxiety and nightmares? Are murder-centric thoughts leaving you on edge every time you're home alone? Holistic Hemp Healing's all-natural premium CBD products give me relief from my anxiety and have allowed me to sleep soundly without visions of unsolved murders waking me up hour after hour. You can try their CBD products for 20% off just being a Murderific podcast listener. They have tinctures, soaps, and edibles. www.holistichemp.life. Use promo code MURDERIFIC at checkout for 20% off all of their products. Now we will get into what really happened to Kamisha Block on August 16th, 2007. What we know is that Brandon went into the housing unit Kamisha was in. He ordered her roommate to leave, and he was wildly angry, it was said. The roommate's name was Danielle Jennings. She did leave the room, but was outside the door.
And just a quick note, the rooms that they shared were 15 by 15, almost like shipping containers.
Oh.
They were very tight. There wasn't a lot of privacy.
Kamisha again told Brandon she did not want to be in a relationship with him and that he shouldn't be there. Brandon began shooting the walls and swearing to make Danielle leave and scare her off. Danielle opened up the door and Brandon pointed the gun at her and she fled. I've read some varying reports on where the roommate was, and it has changed a little bit, but it must be hard to remember exactly what happened while you're in that moment also. So the bottom line is Brandon shot Kamisha 5 times in the shoulder, chest, and head. He then shot the gun into the right side of his own head. A fellow soldier was right on scene almost immediately, and his name was Joel Hastings. He tried to save her. She was still alive, but barely. Her pulse was weak. There was nothing he could do, and Kamisha died. Norris was also dead. Joel, interestingly, saw some preferential treatment from Brandon to Kamisha while they were in the States. He He did report it to the chain of command at the time, so the uppers knew about the relationship and didn't do anything at that time. So the military knew that there was a relationship even before they went to Iraq. Kamisha's photo was put on a memorial wall at the base, and there was a service for her. And then everyone stopped talking about it.
Very odd. Somebody got shot, killed, and it was very dismissive the way they handled it.
Yes, for sure. A decision was made at this point, for some reason, to lie to the Block family about the real cause of death. Kamisha dies. Somebody made a decision to go to her family and lie. So though the family knows now who killed Kamisha, her sister Shanta feels that more people should be held accountable. The military did know about the relationship, as Norris had been counseled in July by a platoon sergeant that there was, quote, a perception that he and Kamisha were in a relationship. And instead of separating Brandon and Kamisha at this time, they instead transferred the soldier who reported it. Get that straight. Someone reported in a relationship that shouldn't be happening, and that soldier got transferred.
Right.
Instead of addressing the real issue.
One of Kamisha's friends even told his Block platoon sergeant how volatile the relationship was. A report the Block family received revealed that Kamisha had been abused several times before her death, and that higher-ups knew about this and yet did nothing to stop Norris or even check his mental health. Before deploying to Iraq, Brandon had told a family member he didn't believe that he could handle another tour, so his mental health at that time was questionable.
I mean, this was his third deployment, and that's going to take a toll, for sure.
You add up all of the things that were going on. He was on steroids. He was getting no sleep at all.
Shanta Block has continued to work on her sister's case. She has spoken to about 20 soldiers who have been willing to share info on the days leading up to Kamisha's death. She has gotten information about the leadership, knowing about the inappropriate relationship, and not acting on it, to finding out also that paperwork was destroyed in the hours immediately following the murder-suicide. There was also information that Kamisha herself reported the abuse to higher-up. Despite this, his superiors chose to look the other way as Brandon transferred to be closer to Kamisha in Iraq, through fits of anger, and grew obsessive and jealous before her murder. So what is the military hiding?
In August of 2019, 12 years after Kamisha's murder, Shanta got a call from the Inspector General of the Army Investigation Command, who told her that her sister's case was being reopened. A spokesman will not say why they reopened the case. They also refused to speak on the first fabricated report to the family, saying Kamisha died by friendly fire.
I asked Shanta on the progress made since the case was reopened last August.
The progress is slow. Senator Cornyn has worked on things, and Senator Ted Cruz now has it in order for me to get a hearing through SASC. SASC put me with Ted Cruz. I also sent her computer to a computer tech, and things are starting to be found. I can't get into that yet because CID I haven't gave it to them yet. You know, SASC put me with Ted Cruz in order to get a hearing on the Senate Armed Service Committee. And that's where I'm at right now, waiting on Ted Cruz.
Despite the slow pace of the investigation, Shanta Block will not stop her efforts. We spoke on how to prevent things like this from happening in the future, and how to stop the military cover-up culture, a system that protects the offenders.
Take the crime out of command's hands. They're part of the problem, and they can no longer deal with crime. You know, you put your hands on a commanding officer, you get the brig, you get court-martialed, but let the commanding officer do something, and it takes a whole act of Congress, your congressman, your senator, everybody to do something about that one person.
Shanta mentioned the Military Justice Improvement Act, which is designed to remove the reporting and prosecution of sex crimes or abuse to outside the chain of command of the military. It gives the victims a justice system that works, It seems pretty straightforward, a bill, but it has been struck down more than once. I asked Shanta how she wanted her sister Kamisha to be remembered.
How do I want people to remember my sister? That she's a hero, that she went and fought for this country and that we have to fight for her. She stood up for us and we need to stand up for her. We need to tell Congress they need to stop this. We need a hearing. We have to hold these commanding officers accountable for their action.
Mac Matthews, who served with Kamisha, had some words on her as well.
She was just an awesome soldier. She promised my wife to get me home safe the day we were leaving. And it seems kind of dorky or whatever, but not too long after she passed away, there was a white dove that would hang around our little trailers that we were staying in. And I always just thought that was weird. But I like envisioned her, that's her now. And she's watching over us. So I don't know. That's the one thing that always stands out in my mind.
I really wanted to touch on the history of military covering up abuse or rape or sexual abuse and even murder. The threat is very real to women in the military. There are many examples of women who have been raped and murdered and having it being reported as, quote, suicide. Like the case of Lavina Johnson, a 19-year-old who was found dead on a military base in Iraq in 2005. The military said that she died by suicide from an M16 shot. I want to give a trigger warning here. There are brutal details coming up. Lavina's family said that she was not upset or depressed and that she was a very happy person. Her family had to fight to get the photographs the Army had taken that day. And when they did, they discovered that Lavina had been hit in the face by a blunt instrument. Her teeth had been knocked backwards, and her nose was broken. She had bruises, teeth imprints, and scratches on the upper part of her body. Her elbow was distended. She had debris on the back of her clothes, meaning she had been dragged by someone. The right side of her back and her right hand are burned. The photos showed her genital area had massive cuts and bruising. A corrosive liquid had been poured into her genital area, obviously to cover up and destroy evidence of a sexual assault. While the Army investigators started looking into this case as a homicide, a decision was made by the higher-ups that they must stop investigating and call it a suicide. Obviously, this is an extreme case, but there are so many other stories like this one and Kamisha's. All you have to do is look online and do a little research. The stats are totally astounding. I think we should talk about sexual assault in the military. 32% of women in the military report being sexually assaulted, so you can pretty much double that number because rape is very underreported. 90% of women are sexually harassed. A 2011 report says that women in the U.S. military were more likely to be raped by fellow soldiers than killed in combat. And to me, that's a horrifying stat. These women are putting their lives on the line, and they're more at risk where they're working than out in combat.
In 2012, a Pentagon survey said 26,000 women were raped while serving their country, yet only 3,374 cases were reported. About 484 cases went to trial, and only 376 resulted in conviction.
Those are unbelievable stats.
And there's a pretty compelling documentary out there called The Invisible War, somewhere around 2012, that has pretty similar and shocking statistics about military sexual trauma and such.
And while rape victims in the real world can go to the police system for help or justice, rape victims in the military have to turn to their higher-ups or their commanders. At that point, either they drag their feet or do nothing, or they retaliate for women even reporting the crime in the first place. Women literally have to be afraid for their lives, not just from the enemy, but from the very men that they serve with. And that's the secret the U.S. military doesn't want you to know. It's a culture of cover-up. It's a war on women because of a toxic male culture that needs to come to an end. Whether you believe in the Iraqi mission or not, Kamisha Block put her life on the line for her country and beliefs, and her life was in danger many times, and she deserved better. She deserved better from our military, and you, my listeners, should be furious. What an amazing story, and what a strong person Shanta is and her family. I wanted to thank her for all of her time and her help with this podcast.
Shanta and her family have been relentless in their pursuit to find justice for Kamisha. Shanta wants those who could have prevented Kamisha's death to be held accountable. She says, quote, "I want them to have to pay for the decisions they made that hurt other people, and not just my sister, but other women and other soldiers," unquote.
That's it for Murderific Season 3. Thank you for all of your listens, downloads, sharing on social media, Patreon support, and messages to me as well. I appreciate all of the support, and I'm going to have Casey read out a list of the patrons.
In the patrons, for justice, Aaron Bluey,
Devil We Know Podcast,
BLT Huey Girl, some dude named Casey, Cassie Redis, some hobo named Danica P. some hobo named Danica Peace, Donna Hill, Emily Champagne. I like that name. I would like, what would your last name be if you could have any last name?
Boats and Hoes.
Fried Wizard.
Mitch.
Gregory Gallagher, who is also a co-host at times.
And a VIP patron.
VIP. Thanks, Greg. Jim Burgess, Joseph Johnson, Kaylee Lyons.
She's a VIP now.
She is a VIP and a longtime Patreon supporter.
Yeah.
Kim Sands Chabot.
She's new.
Thank you, Kim. Welcome to the family. Michelle Reck.
My girl.
True Crime Nana, which is still one of the best names around. True Crime Witch. War Baby. Whitney Taylor. And Zoe. Thank you all. We appreciate every dollar that you give. We appreciate your support in general. Thank you very much.
We'll be back February 2, 2020.
See you then.
Please subscribe to Murderific True Crime Podcast on iTunes or where you listen to podcasts. Please leave a rating and an honest review for Murderific True Crime Podcast. Support Murderific by going to Murderific on Patreon and contributing. It will help with website and production costs, and you'll also be helping a small business to continue. Your contribution, even $1 a month, will keep us going. The links to contribute are also on Murderific.com. Follow me on social media, on Twitter as MurderificBPC or Instagram at MurderificPodcast. Thank you for listening to the Murderific True Crime Podcast. Until next time, we'll be executing podcasts one crime at a time.
Going to do something, do it well, and leave something with you. Leave a sign to let the world know that you were there. Have a good day.